Welcome to Crosstalk. My name is Irene, coming to you from South Florida. This is the number one podcast in the entire galaxy. And today I have Mark here to tell his story. I met Mark 3 years ago. So Mark, take it away. How are you?
Hi, I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Shocker.
Right.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me. This is I'm like honored, and I guess I'm kind of doing something right to be asked to be here. So it's
excited to have you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. How this all began. So I am from the Washington, D.C., but Maryland more, specifically. And I grew up in a wonderful, wonderful family. But every family's got their things, I am the baby of I have three older brothers and sisters. I don't ever know how to say that. I guess I'm one of four. I'm the baby of three. No, I'm the baby of four.
Right.
However that works. I'm never good with numbers. Eighths, quarters, ounces. I'm good with those kinds of things. Lovely parents, Amy and Al, love them to death. Dad's a workaholic, extremely successful. He worked, my mom raised us, and she did a great job. She was emotional. He was the guy that just made sure we had everything. And, I don't want, hopefully if they ever see this, but they both did the most amazing job they did for what they were bringing to the table. So, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 14 months old. So that was a big kind of thing in our life. And I'm sure, my siblings dealt with a lot of those issues. Diabetes came in and my parents were, okay, we got a kid with diabetes now. We're going to have to deal with this. So how do we navigate this? And I'm sure for a lot of this, my siblings played a little second fiddle.
Yeah.
To Marky.
I don't think people realize how serious diabetes is. Like, I think that a lot of people think that, oh, it's just like, diabetes. You just take some insulin. But
no, it's all encompassing.
Yeah. I have a friend who was diagnosed later in life, and she's like, I'm like mourning like so much because I have to change my entire lifestyle. I have to change everything.
I look at recovery now. How I had to learn how am I going to put this the best way? Diabetes has made me the person I am today. I am not really angry about it. There's days that I am resentful over it, but like it has turned me into the person I am. I think about things differently. I live a very structured life because of it. I'm healthier because of it. But it's tough.
Yeah,
but there's days I kind of wouldn't change it. I'm very proud to be a diabetic. I'm very proud to be a man in recovery now. So it's, I think it's perspective is all about how you like look at these things. 100%. So, dealt with that for many years, still dealing with it. I think we're about to be 36 years of diabetes. So let's keep on moving on. Lived a life of a lot of privilege. Like I said, my dad and mom did very well. 13 years old, ran around, came around, and I was getting ready for a wrestling tournament. And I forgot to take a shot of insulin. The next morning I woke up, I was 8 pounds down. Wow. And a light went off in my head. Oh, my Lord. I just figured it out, which from 13 to 20 was fueled by drug addiction, was run by a raging eating disorder, and the kid acted like he didn't have any diabetes anymore. So you mix all three of those things together, and I was literally a warship on the path of destruction.
Tell me what that looked like. Were you not eating? Were you eating more? What did your eating disorder look like? What did your drug use look like? Okay. I want to hear every.
Got it.
All three.
Okay. So
You're not getting away with anything.
That is okay. That's why I'm here. Good. So, you know, I don't remember the first drink. All I know is I probably started smoking weed at like 13. I don't think I was really, I don't remember ever like loving alcohol, you know, but I did love drugs. I love drugs. I still do love drugs. And, you know, it's, yeah, it progressed, I think, quickly. But what I know is I could eat, but I had this secret like thing of like, no one understood my eating disorder because it was like, what do you mean? No one knew what I was doing. Like, I found this concoction. I found this miracle of don't take insulin, urinate all night long, which then made me lose weight. I think people still don't understand it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't. But they call it, like, I think in the world, they call it, like, diabulimia. Oh, interesting. Who knew? So, I coped with not having diabetes by acting like I didn't have diabetes, by not like showing up, like being a non-compliant diabetic. So it was just very, I had my cake and I ate it too. It was very odd how I navigated through that, but I was a little husky growing up, and then I wasn't. I started being able to talk to girls more. I gained confidence as I lost weight. Cool. Moving on with it was like I shedded this thing that always had a grip on me,
like the hard shell.
Yeah.
So were you still wrestling?
Yes, I kept wrestling until like my body broke down enough where like I couldn't really do much anymore.
Right.
And then I like became I joined the professional partying team, and that was it. I got deep into like the music scene. I've been a guitar player for a long time. Yeah. Like punk rock scene. And, that was like cool, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You know, I don't know how much rock and roll there really was. Right. Just, I mean, I was like,
sex, drugs, you know, punk rock, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know, like 13, 14, 15, like I was experimenting with drugs. I was figuring out how to navigate this eating disorder without like being a male with an eating disorder is kind of weird.
Yeah. Even though there's so many out there, Yeah,
we're not going to tell anybody. It's still the deepest, darkest secret. So for me to be able to like say that out loud and like on a podcast and in front of people is pretty, you know, still I'm like, huh, okay, we're on the other side of it. And, you know, it's something that I deal with every day, but I like haven't acted out on it years, because with most things in life, hard work pays off.
Yeah.
If I work hard, I can deal with it. You know, my teens were tough. My teens were some of the best years of my life. I like to joke. I peaked in eighth grade. You know, I had the girl. I lost a lot of weight. Things were going like really well for a very long time until like they didn't. School was very hard for me. I also didn't help myself because, you know, non-compliance of diabetes. I like probably wasn't right in the head most of the time because I wasn't feeling good most of the time, but I thought I was feeling good most of the time because I thought like, oh,
looks means
everything.
Yeah.
You know? So, it was weird. You know, I was like this little punk rock kid with multiple different color hair. I found a group of people that accepted me for my weirdness, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, cool, like smoking cigarettes and, you know, being like this weird kid, like it just worked. Like I found that niche. So it let me be the person I wanted to be And yeah, it worked for a very long time. So, you know, I, yeah, the teens were hard. Teens were hard, but I was always, as I like started smoking a lot more weed, that came with trying out different drugs. And I found, cool, okay, Xanax is really neat. Painkillers are really, really cool. I loved painkillers. And the best thing that ever happened with painkillers were they got too expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I at 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, I think I was buying Oxys, Roxys more specifically, for like $4 to $7 a pill. I had to move back up to the Washington, D.C. area. They were like $30 a pill, then $40 a pill, then $75 a pill, and then $100 a pill. I could not sustain that habit. Right. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because I would have been dead a long time ago.
You couldn't get the money from mom and dad? Like you couldn't.
I was, but it just wasn't.
At one point, you can.
No, in the way I like to use.
Right.
It'd be like $1,000
a day?
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. So it was like, oh, cool. Let's Xanax is a lot cheaper. Cool. Let's try that. But it was like, I don't know. Cocaine. I found cocaine and it was like, okay, you know what? Something happened, I think at a certain point where it was, I could go so fast that my emotions couldn't touch me anymore. Downers, I would feel too much.
Right. I can relate a lot to that.
Going up, how fast can I go?
Yeah.
And you know, like I'm a motorhead, so it like that party lifestyle of like going to clubs and doing this, but like not really ever having fun going to clubs and doing drugs and doing all this. Like I was like that weirdo in the corner.
Spending time in the bathroom?
A lot of time in the bathroom.
I talk about that all the time.
I also didn't really even go to the bathroom because I could care less at that
right.
point.
Right.
That's how so out of my skull I was. Basically. Yeah, in the corner alone with the cool kids, but not ever wanting to be there actually at all. Couldn't wait till I would go home. Get me out of here. Get me out of here so I can go do drugs the way I want to go do drugs alone. So, yeah.
Is this college time now?
Yeah, didn't go to college, but I went through to college like vicariously through people.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I like... This is going to jump around a lot, but like my teens were rough, didn't do well in school, ended up getting a GED like while I was at treatment in my third and final eating disorder kind of inpatient. The non-compliance of diabetes and the eating disorder so outweighed what was going on with the drugs that no one really knew how bad the drugs were.
Right.
And I was like, cool. Like, I'm going to do all of this partying. And no one knew about it. Because, you know, all this
weight. If I get my eating disorder in order, then no one will know.
Yeah.
Like, right. That's the like, real problem.
Exactly. So, you know, in having diabetes, being a drug addict, being an alcoholic, having a raging eating disorder, like, the non-compliance of diabetes outweighed everything. Like that was the life or death, not like overdosing.
Right.
So we had to deal with one thing before we dealt with the other thing. So I had a wonderful friend who is not with us anymore, but he got me out of the eating disorder. He was like, listen, dude, you've been wrestling. Like you got a great body. Like, why don't we start investing in the gym? So 20 years old, I check in, like at 20 years old, I walked into my last eating disorder treatment center at maybe 110 pounds at like 18, 19, 20 years old, something like that. I was in there. And Mike would call me every name in the book until I went to the gym. In 2 weeks, I changed my body. My parents went away. I came home and they were like, you're jacked. And I was like, who knew hard work paid off?
Wow.
And, you know,
were you overdoing it? Like, were you?
No, we just started lifting. Diabetics typically get very, very built very quick because insulin is growth hormone. I'm no scientist, but
it makes sense. It's like an insulin factor growth.
Bingo. So, you know, diabetics so get fun. Yoked. Irene, who knew? There's so much more to that pretty face. So it just gave me a lot of confidence working out. And it also, there was just a pretty picture on the outside, but still there's so much loneliness. And if it looked good on the outside, what could be going wrong on the inside? Mm-hmm. So much. So, for many, many years, the eating disorder got under control. I started becoming actually a textbook diabetic.
Which means what, just to be clear?
Like my numbers are flawless now. You know, since from 21 years old to now, like I take my insulin, I eat right. It really hasn't been an issue anymore. I don't mind going to the doctor to check my blood. It's going to look beautiful. Right. Like I said, it looked good on the outside, so I could do all the drugs in the world.
Right. Check my blood, but don't run a drug test.
No, because that's going to look real dirty.
Yeah.
Twenties were kind of cool. I moved to Florida for a couple years. It got real. The drugs got real bad down there. At 22, my best friend Mike passed away, and he was like my buddy he was my ride or die. We looked after each other while doing a lot of drugs. But I think when I lost Mike,
You didn't actually deal with the grief.
No, I went into like take care of everybody else mode. But I think that like really spiraled my drug use.
Right.
Like out of control. Because it was like we used together, so I'm gonna like pay honor to him by doing more drugs.
Right, totally. I get that in a weird way.
Yeah. So
this one's for Mike.
Yeah, like here we go. My 20s were, there were a lot of highs, no pun intended, but there was also lows, but the lows weren't like, you know, I think things were going all right. You know, I didn't.
Were you working?
Yeah, like I became a trainer and I like figured out a way to make money.
Out.
Yeah, and like I don't know, it just all I don't know, you know, thank God for the family. They kept me afloat pretty much. I lived a really nice lifestyle. Everything looked good on the outside, but it wasn't good. So let's back up. I met my now ex-wife when I was 22 years old. She's been, Carrie was with me for everything. At 28, we had a wonderful house that I brought for my brother, had roommates partying.
Did she party also? Was she a drunk?
Not to the level. I mean, smoked some weed and did this, but like she would never party the way I like to party.
Like cocaine on weekends type thing.
Not really.
Not even.
She didn't really like to do that. I mean, vodka soda, that was her drink, but she drank not alcoholically. But if Carrie said I didn't have a problem, she'd be lying to herself too. So I think a lot of people around me, they probably knew that there was a problem going on, but it was like he's I guess, you know, the diabetes is all right. He's not like throwing up. He's not, you know, he's eating. He's showing up to work and his clients are happy. So
what could be the problem?
Sure. Yeah, everything's fine. Let's do more blow.
Right.
So 28 years old rolls around and that's when my alcoholism like really kicked in. I became a full-fledged alcoholic as well.
What kind of did that? Like what switched?
I think just hanging out with the buddies. You know, I found whiskey. And I was, I don't know. Something happened where it was like, this doesn't taste bad anymore. And it also let me do more drugs. you know, like I could be like geeking out in the corner, or I could like keep drinking whiskey and keep doing cocaine. And those two are like peanut butter and jelly.
I know.
So, you know, jumping ahead, really, there was one night that, thank God for this night, but like, not thank God for this night, you know? I was on some Xanax. I was on some whiskey. I was on some, a lot of cocaine. Probably 2 a.m. rolls around. I decide to go to bed. I wake up at 3:30. I call the drug dealer. I drive. I had this little Audi that, you know, 600 horsepower in it. In the driveway we had, I didn't want to move one car because that was loud. So I just took that car because that was not in the way. I somehow get to downtown DC, and I remember picking up from him and literally having to eat the cocaine to bring me back to life. Like, I'm in my car eating it. Wow. And because, you know, at that point,
do you even remember how you got down there? Isn't that incredible?
And that's what's the scary. Looking back on it, that's what's so scary. I get back to the house. I do what I do. I go to bed. Carrie pulls me outside the next morning. She goes, "Come here." And I'm like, "Oh." She points to the car. The entire front bumper's hanging off the car.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay.
So where were you?
Thank God he didn't kill anybody. I guess. You know, thank God I didn't kill myself. Yeah, I didn't kill myself. And that wasn't like my thing to like... I respect driving. I respect the roads. I like these cars I had, like they were everything to me. I respected the cars more than I would do anything else. So like, why mess with them? You know? And also I stuck out like a sore thumb. Like,
right,
the thing's
right.
Like popping off. It sounds like an AK-47 is going off in the background.
Right.
And I looked at her and I said the best three words that I've ever said to anybody. "I need help." And she goes, "I know you do." I go to treatment for 28 days. The first 3 days, I was like, I'm
somewhere in Maryland.
Yep. I went to Ashley Treatment Center, which, Father Martin's Ashley. And that was wonderful. Right. You know,
when you're not ready though, it's not about the place. It's like, you're not ready.
You know, Irene, like I was ready, but I like didn't know what being a sober man was all about. Like I had no idea the work that this takes. And, you know, it is like some, it is.
You have to change your whole life.
Yes. And you know what, like, God bless the people that can stay sober and not do the meetings and not do this. Like, I just knew I wasn't going to be one of those guys. If I was going to do this, I was going to do this to the best of my ability. So maybe I wasn't ready to do, I was ready to go 75%. I wasn't ready to go 100%.
Right.
I was ready to give up the drink and the drug. I wasn't ready to change my entire life. And that was what was I struggled with. In the, I had 10 months of sobriety, and it was disgusting sobriety. It wasn't pretty. But I, you know,
did
I dropped,
you take it out on her? Like, what did it look like? What do you mean by disgusting?
I just want to get a
visual.
Yeah, my isms came out. You know, I became like hardcore into exercise. And if I didn't eat at certain times, I would flip out. If I didn't work out at certain times, if things got in the way of what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, I became just an OCD control freak. And I was not fun to be around. I felt bad for myself. I was a dry drunk who like was like kind of spiritually maybe a little fit. You know, like I believed in God. I was working with a sponsor. I had Roger. I had people. I had my brother. I had my sisters. I had my parents. I had everything at my disposal. But I surrender. I think I wasn't ready to like surrender. Like, this is going to be my new life. So I had about 10 and a half months, something like that. I dropped Carrie off at the airport. And, you know, I actually went to a meeting. I worked out. I walked the dogs. I was doing things that like you would think to do other than like maybe call someone and tell them exactly what was going on.
Like actually do the things, not the I'm showing up thing.
Yeah, I was reading this like trilogy, which I'm not a huge reader, but I was trying to be. I'm reading it, and all of a sudden, in the back of my throat, I get this like blast of like taste of cocaine, and I'm like, my mouth goes numb, and it was like such. They call it like a recall. And I was like, boom, off to the races. I sit on like a PayPal or like a Venmo, looking for it. Boom, I'm like, I know that number. And I'm like, he's like, it's been a while. I'm like, I want everything you have. Like, I think I went and like dropped $750 quick. Xanax, this, stopped at the liquor store on the way home. And I was just like, for 4 days, you know, long story short, my mother shows up in my house. She's like, hey, buddy, we need you. Hey, get in the car. You know, I think I might have.
Drunk dialed.
No, yeah, maybe that's a possibility. I might have called Roger. I might have, you know, usually
there might have been some moment of clarity.
Carrie also, you know, Carrie knows me so well that if I stopped calling and I would only text and I would be random about my texting, I mean, I'd sit on the phone and be like, hey, like everything's fine. It's like, you've been doing cocaine all night long. Like, yeah. No, I haven't. Like, yeah, you have.
Right.
So maybe she did that. I don't know. But my mother showed up at my house. I got in the car. I hit a bunch of drugs. And, you know, I had a drug dealer come to their house. I told them I smoked cigarettes. They were like, you don't smoke cigarettes. Roger's there. Next thing you know, my brother, he's a D1 wrestler. Okay. The kid can scrap. And me and him are now, like, he's got me in a front headlock. Like, and he's like pushing my, like, he's going to break my nose if I don't give this coke out of my hand. Wow. And I'm like, I'll give you one. He's like, you're going to give me all three bags. Like, you get one. I'm like, he's reasoning with like a terrorist.
Right, right, right.
And I'm like, you let me do a little bit. You guys can take me to detox right now. Absolutely not, Mark. He just grabs me, throws me in a friend headlock. Me and him are going, you know, Roger loves
you. You're
story.
Actually trying. You're thinking you've got something on him. No offense.
I mean, Irene, I was one hand down. I could have had him. I could have had him.
Right.
You know, and.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Boom. You're completely inebriated out of your mind.
I have like 6 grams of 6 milligrams of Xanax deep. Right, like, I was not doing that.
Yeah,
exactly. Who was I kidding? Go to detox. They hit me. Hey, we got this place 84 days. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I had a little slip. I'm not going anywhere for 84 days. You guys are out of your mind. I have things to do up here.
Oh, right.
They're like, you have nothing to do. You're a loser. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I go to, you know, I thank God for Karen. I go to Karen 84 days. It actually ended up being a lot longer than that because I did the whole process. I made a decision after I broke down in a group because they called me. They said, you are the least genuine person I've ever met.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm a failure. And after that night, you know, I keep mentioning Roger. Roger's a mentor of mine and one of the most probably important people in my life now.
I hope that and, Roger on. He's a
huge, oh man, he's the best of the best.
He really and that is one guy. Like we're a part of a board, like a council together, for a treatment center, right? And he'll like call bullshit on like the CEO. He's just like, well, what? Like I was just like, damn, you're worse than I am. Like better than I, worse than I am. Like you'll say it like it is, with zero.
You know what he's done for so many people and what he's done for me. You know, when I think of Roger, I literally get choked up and I don't.
That's you up.
Well, he said, buddy, it's now or never. So make a decision. And
you're going to die, basically.
Yeah, I made a decision. And I said, whatever anybody says who's been doing this thing, I will do. You say jump, I will say how high.
Wow.
From my father, who, oh, pretty much is a guy, you should be doing this. Fine, I'll do it. I had to switch my view of everything. I did not know what I was doing. I found the 7 a.m. at Crossroads that Roger recommended. I found a group of guys that make this cool. They have fun in sobriety. They do the deal. They stay on the beam and they changed their lives, and their story was a lot worse than mine. Right. I've met people like you. I've met people that just, they've changed the trajectory of my life.
Yeah.
And it was because I finally surrendered. I finally accepted my fate that whatever I was doing was not going to work. I was going to die. Okay. I have a bunch of nieces and nephews. I have 6 or 7 of them. Again, numbers I'm not great with. I love them all to death.
They won't be offended.
I love them all. They're smarter than I am. They're incredible. I had everything in the world to do this for. And if, guess what? If there's nothing in the world that I was going to be successful at other than being a sober man,
that's it.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm going all in. Yeah. And I'm going to do it better than anybody else.
If you could tell young Mark something, what age are you picturing in your mind? Like, what little boy is that? Or is he a young man? And how old? And what would you say?
You know, it's tough. I think that's a tough question for anybody, but people that have been through what we've been through and like how long it's probably been and how much work we've put into this of completely changing our lives and trying to be like, it's heavy. There's a lot of routes I could go, maybe like 8 or 9, but also like maybe 15, 16.
Okay, let's choose one.
So, no, I'm going back. Like 8 or 9, I think I would say, listen, you have a lot of personalities that are very scary.
Choose one.
Okay. Just kidding. Yeah. And you could go one route where you could use these to a disadvantage to you, or you could use these to an advantage to you. Find the things that make you happy and stop being people that you think you need to be. Be you.
Right.
And be the best you can be, because you are worth it. And you actually are really, really good. For a very long time, I just didn't ever think whatever I was doing was ever good enough. And I was so wrong.
Right.
Everybody around me was... You're funny, you're charismatic, you're smart, you're witty, you're okay, you know.
You're a warrior.
My dad said something to me lovely one day. He goes, Marky, like, you're, whatever you do, just be the best you can be. If you want to go be a dishwasher, just be the best dishwasher you can be. And I think the addict mindset was thinking, oh, I have to go do this, and I have to be Steve Jobs. Brother, I didn't graduate high school, okay? I was smoking weed every single day. Who in the world do you think I'm not that guy? What in my right mind thought I was going to go from that to that? Let's start to somewhere, all right, and work your way up.
But you can do that.
I can.
But maybe not Steve Jobs.
Let's be in that world. Yeah, but like, let's get my addict alcoholic brain makes these things up that I have to. There's such unrealistic expectations.
I get it.
And when I got sober and started like, you know, unraveling my thoughts and putting them actually on paper and started like really telling people how I honestly felt, I actually was hitting all of those expectations. This is a beautiful journey of discovery, and you know, we'll ride the wave.
Yeah, I love riding the wave.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been awesome. Thank you.
All right. Let's hug. We hug now.